Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live tonight. This is October the 14th, 2011. They said that's the only way you can tell it's live if I give a date. So we were going to continue with what our trip was because we were 6 weeks. We were gone. But if anyone wants to call in and ask any questions, I'll give out the toll-free number because we will be here tonight to answer live questions. The toll-free number, if anybody wants to call in, is 1-888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. Okay, I apologize last week if we seemed to be a little scrambled, but we had just returned.
We were scrambled.
Yeah, Julia's here with me tonight. And it was scrambled because we had just got back the night before and we had not even begun to adjust to jet lag yet. And it was a long, hard trip on the way back. So if I sounded a little discombobulated, that was why it was. But I wanted to continue talking about some of the things that happened on the trip, and then we may go into some other things too. But I think last week I finished about the sacred tour when the things that happened in Stonehenge and Glastonbury. So I think that's where we ended.
No, you're talking about, I don't remember actually. I know we talked about Stonehenge. We were inside the circle. I don't know how much in depth you went on it. Because Avery, we were there. And Maria was doing a lot of the spiritual things out there, and then at the Abbey at Glastonbury and the tour.
Yeah, I think I talked about that because they said there was an opening in the side.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and that people, when they went in there, they said they went insane, and that's why they closed it up. And we were thinking that was might have been just a cover-up to keep people from going in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as far as we got. But after we finished the sacred tour, and those were amazing places that we went to. And on this trip, too, we also went to Scotland. So we were all over the British Isles. Dublin, and we went up to Edinburgh. And those are all fascinating places. Mm-hmm. And, but then after that, I had my class in Farringdon, which is outside of Oxford. And that was a really big class. My classes are getting bigger and bigger each one we do. This one was like an auditorium. It was like in a college where the seats go up, slanted up, so that way it made it easier for everybody to see. But we had 84 people in that class. They're getting bigger and bigger, and people are coming from all over the world to take these classes. That's the amazing thing about it. And they're learning a lot, too, because a level two we're having, they're reporting really amazing things that they're doing with the work. And here in the beginning, I was afraid it couldn't be taught, but they're taking it and they're running with it. They're doing things that I wouldn't even have thought of. So that's really making me very happy about all of that. So anyway, after the class, then we went in two different directions. I went to Rome while Julia went to Egypt.
Yep. Adventure me.
Yeah, and we separated that way. But we had some time there when she wanted to go to Egypt to see about working up tours next year.
Right.
You already talked about the cruise that you're planning, didn't you? I think you did last week. Or do you want to bring that
actually,
up?
I don't remember what we talked about last week.
We have been going in circles trying to get ready to leave again. And so it's very hard to remember what we did a week ago. But we are planning a cruise, mm-hmm. You said, to the Holy Land and those parts, and Egypt is on this cruise.
Right, right. It'll be I think it's a two-day stop in Egypt.
And that's a 12-day cruise?
Uh-huh. Right, 12-day cruise, and it runs around the Mediterranean. Really cool places.
And that's going to be when next year?
It'll be in October. But we're still working out the dates and who will be on it and things like that. So you'll be the main person on it.
Yeah, and there'll be some other one of our authors will be on it also.
Right.
But that's about the time, because she said at that time, that's usually when it cools off in Egypt.
Right.
A little cooler anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot better than what I just did. And then and definitely you don't want to go during the summer, which they were looking at. So.
Yeah, they said August, and that's too hot there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Rome, and then Julia will tell you about her adventures in Egypt. Because she saw places that are not normally seen by people when they go over there. She had a native, I guess you would say, of Egypt, mm-hmm. who knew a lot of these things.
Right, right.
And he was able to take you to places that normal tourists doesn't get to see. But I went to Rome, and I had a few days there, and I've always wanted to see the Colosseum. And there were some other places there. I thought I'd never been to Rome. It was a good chance to go and see these things. And from our hotel, you could look directly out at the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
It was right there. Julia joined me there after she finished in Egypt.
Right.
And you could look right out at the Vatican, and it was really interesting. Of course, it's just a big building like all the rest. It is a beautiful building.
Oh, well, Rome and Germany, it's got so many beautiful old buildings. I mean, everything's just, it's so different from over here. You just don't see anything like that here, any of these places we went.
But it's like in Europe, the old is there, they leave the ruins, and then the city is just all built around it. So it's kind of like the old is swallowed up by the modern. Really.
Well, I wouldn't say it's swallowed up. It's kind of married in there. They respect their old, and they keep it. And it's married within it and joined. And you know, it's just still there. It's not like here we would just tear it down, I think.
Yeah, but here anything 100 years old is old. Over there, it goes back thousands of years.
Right.
But, while she was in Egypt, I wanted to see I wanted to go to the Vatican, but the main thing I wanted to see was the Sistine Chapel. I've always wanted to see Michelangelo's paintings, and so that was the main thing. I took a day to do that. But, of course, I found a lot of these places, when you get there, they're not exactly what you think they're going to be. Nothing is ever like the pictures I see, no matter where I go. Once you get there, it's not what your expectations think it's going to be. Because the Sistine Chapel is so huge and so tall, you can barely make out the paintings on the ceiling when you're standing on the floor. They're so small. And the pictures you see give a lot better view of it, because when you're there, you look up and it's way up there.
You mean the pictures you see, you mean like what you buy?
Yeah, whenever they, you know, they have the picture of God.
Oh, you mean the pictures you see out, what they've taken.
Okay, yeah, that they have taken, because this thing is huge. It's an enormous room, and the painting goes all the way across the top of the ceiling and then down the sides. Very complex, lots of figures all throughout. They have the Last Judgment. They have the whole story of the Bible going from the creation of man all the way through. So it's a complex series of paintings, and we had a really good guide that he told me a lot of things. I'm always looking for lost knowledge, so he was saying a lot of things that I'd never heard about the Vatican and about the Sistine Chapel. But he said it took Michelangelo 30 years to complete all those paintings. Started when he was in his 30s, and he ended up when he was in his 60s.
Wow.
That's a dedication. Of course, he didn't have a choice. The Pope had hired him to do it, so he had to keep on. But they said that's the difference, is it's totally different when he ended than when he started, because he's 30 years older. It's a whole totally different person. And they said there's a lot of hidden things in those paintings that you don't know are there unless you're looking for them. See, they had right before we went in, they had this big painting on the board outside, so he could point out the things that you can't possibly see when you're in the building. And this man, he said, I'm Catholic, but I'm saying a lot of things that they usually don't want people to know.
Mm.
But one of the things he was bringing up was the part about Adam and Eve. And he said, didn't have anything to do with an apple, forbidden fruit, or any of that, or eating off of the tree of knowledge. It was nothing to do with that. And he was talking about the symbolism of the fruit really went around to the woman's sexual organs. And I know Don always said I can talk about anything I want on this show. But he said what the original sin was sex. That's what it was. It was nothing to do with Eve, Tim giving him temptation and offering him the apple, unless you want to put it all in there together. But it was quite complex. I don't want to be able to go into it all. It doesn't mean sex in general. It meant,
you need to
clarify that part. Yeah, because sex is
mm-hmm.
okay.
Right.
But they said, what he came about was that it was sex that was not procreative.
Right.
And anyway, he was quite explicit, and he was talking about how Michelangelo's paintings, if you look at them, will explain all of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of sex in those paintings, if you look for it.
You look,
yeah.
Probably sex on a lot of things if you look for it.
If you know what to look for. But they said they got the whole thing done, and then people got angry because everybody was naked in the pictures. And they said Michelangelo thought the human body was beautiful, so he painted all these naked people. And they got upset about it. The Pope didn't seem to care. It wasn't him, it was other people. And they wanted him to put robes on them and cover them up. And he couldn't see why, because he said the human body is beautiful. But, and here again, if it is so far away, the people in the picture are so tiny when you see it from the floor below, I don't know what difference it would have made anyway.
Yeah.
But they said Michelangelo got angry about it, and so nobody did anything while he was alive. Then after he was dead, they hired an artist to come in and put robes and clothes on them to cover them up. So a lot of them have been patched up, I guess you would say. But they said that artist after that, his career was ruined because of what he did. They called him the Breeches Artist, putting breeches on all of the
Well, people. Some of them do look really, they don't look right, you know, so.
Just to cover them up, mm-hmm. but that wasn't the way he wanted the paintings to be. Anyway, I thought it was really interesting to get to see all of that. Outside of that, I really wasn't that interested in it. Except another part, they brought up the direct connection between Egypt and the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
They have one museum there, the Vatican Museum. Another part of it is the Egyptian Museum. And outside, they've got a big courtyard. And in the courtyard, they have these Egyptian statues. And they're supposed to be the connection with the ancient Egyptian teachings and the original Catholic teaching. Mm-hmm. And he went back talking about the legends of Horus and Isis,
mm-hmm.
to where that was all related. You know, the old pictures and the Egyptian pictures, they show the goddess holding the baby, and it looks exactly like the pictures of Virgin Mary and the baby. And I said, I asked him, does the Vatican agree with that, that it all goes back, the one of Virgin Mary and the pictures go back to this original painting of Horus and it's Isis and the baby is Horus? And he said, yes, the Vatican acknowledges that's where it all came from.
Huh.
That it does come from the ancient Egyptian legend. That's interesting, because here they had these statues directly tying the Egyptian part to the Catholic part.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Wow.
Which, you know, a lot of those things you wouldn't know just by seeing it. But I really think we got a really good guide. He was telling us a lot of things that maybe the other ones weren't.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you got that guide.
For a reason. Because I told him I was a writer and I'm always looking for hidden knowledge. And so he was telling...
He was more than happy to spill his information. So.
Well, he was telling our group a lot more than the other groups. There were many groups milling around all over the courtyard. One thing, right in the middle of this courtyard, see, after you go there, then you go off to the different places, the Egyptian Museum, the Vatican Museum. You can go over another building where the Pope gives his speeches, all of that. But in the middle of this courtyard, they had this huge, enormous sphere ball. It was a big, huge, golden ball, enormous, right in the middle of this square,
this courtyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, when he touches it, it bends. But it's a huge gold one, and it looks like the earth. But it looks like the earth as if it was split open around the middle. Because it's like if you saw the earth and there was something inside the earth trying to come out. Does that make sense? She's giving me these funny looks.
No.
It's almost mechanical, as though there's openings, but it's like looking into the earth. But there's like another earth inside of the other earth. And it's as though it's trying to come out. And it's split the whole thing open as though it's trying to come out.
Split it down the middle, split
around
it
around the middle.
Around, like around the equator.
Yeah.
Okay,
like that.
Is that open then?
Yeah, it's open and you can see inside.
You can see the other one inside.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you to twirl this thing and it'll move. And I asked him what that was supposed to represent. He said it's as modern, and he said this represented the old earth as the coming into the mechanization age of mechanics and technology age, and that the old earth was coming out into the modern age of technology. That's what it's supposed to represent. But when I was looking at it, to me it represented the separation of the old earth and the new earth.
Well, he's kind of saying, though, a new earth coming out of the old earth.
Yeah.
You know, with a new technology. So.
But the Ordis kind of intended it for it to be technology. But I thought it was interesting. It goes along with our ideas of the old earth and the new earth. And there it was right in the center of the courtyard in the Vatican Museum part. But I took some pictures of it anyway. But it is amazing that it's, that's what I said, what's this supposed to represent? It's like all around the equator, it's like jagged and it's broken open and you can see inside that there's something else in here, like mechanical.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting. But we did get to, by the time she came back, we did get to see the Colosseum. We didn't go inside because we were running out of time. But here again, it's the city right up to it.
Right. People everywhere.
Oh, cars. But they have all these souvenir stands and food stands and people, lines of people. So it's a little hard to picture the way it would have been.
Probably the same way. Lots of people. Something that big is going to, in a big city, it's going to be a lot of people.
Yeah, in those days, it held thousands and thousands of people during its heyday.
Yeah, so it's probably no different. It just looked different.
It's a ruin because part of it was destroyed by an earthquake. But anyway, we got to see that. And then we took the all-day tour.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to go to Pompeii.
Right.
And that was a long tour. It was an all-day thing to go there and come back. All my life, I've been fascinated by Pompeii, and it was destroyed by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius way back, I think it was 6900 B.C. or A.D. after Christ.
A.D., it was A.D., yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And here again, it's all been rebuilt and been anyway.
Well, it wasn't rebuilt. No, they actually dug down and they found
it. I mean, it's been excavated.
You know? Yeah.
It was buried under the ash whenever the mountain erupted. And it's buried under ash for a long time. That's why a lot of it was preserved.
Yeah, it's amazing how much was preserved, actually.
They went down and started digging in, and they even found people.
Right.
The way they were when, whenever they died.
Yeah, because they said that ash was like 600 degrees Fahrenheit. So when it hit someone, you know, yeah, I mean, they weren't killed by lava. They were killed by the ash. It was just one they smothered with it, but it was so hot. It just killed them instantly.
I don't think the lava even went there. It was the ash in
the
air.
Ash, yeah.
And we can see the Mount Vesuvius. There's still smoke coming out.
Yeah, in fact, there's two. What they call them? Two
cones?
Something like that. Two, yeah.
That there's still smoke coming out of them, so it could erupt again.
Yeah.
And I saw a special on TV about that. It said if it happened now, it could even destroy things as far away as Naples, which is really pretty close to Pompeii.
Right. Right. It is. Yeah.
So but people live there, just like they live in California. You know, when an earthquake could happen anytime, they live that close to Mount Vesuvius and don't think anything about it.
Well, I mean, if it's your time, it's your time. So, I mean, meanwhile, enjoy it, I guess.
But it was all preserved, and that's the amazing thing about it. You could actually see.
Well, there are paintings on the walls, even, and things like that you could. Some areas actually were very well preserved. The color of the paint, everything, you know, just where the ash didn't get up under there, I guess, or something. So.
Or just covered it over and preserved it. But,
And that mosaic tiles, floors, and it's just amazing that they were able to find it all.
They start digging for it. There's probably a lot more they haven't even found. But as it was, wouldn't they say there was how many acres?
64
acres of the whole city.
I think so. I think it was 64. It may have been more. I may be wrong.
Well, in my new book, Convoluted Form, there are some stories of people who were there whenever it erupted, which I wanted to get an idea what it looked like to add to that.
Right. Well, it's a beautiful setting because it's like at the end of it, you come out up above and you're actually looking down on this whole area. So it was a beautiful setting.
Uh-huh.
Just, you know. And I think they've recreated a city or the town right below it, you know, kind of at the base where they have the people selling things. But, I mean, there's a whole city size that people probably could live there. But I remember they're in there, you're talking about Isis. She had a home there. They had a temple of Isis, and she had a home there, too. So that was her whatever. Summer home or something.
But anyway, I'm always fascinated by things that are old. And these are very ancient, and it is remarkable they've been preserved.
Right.
But yeah, going up to the gates, you have all the people selling souvenirs and selling food, and you have the modern mixed with the old.
Well, yeah, but that's to be expected there, at least once you go in. I mean, it's a park. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. As I said, you can't take enough pictures. I mean, it's not one of these things, a few pictures tell the story. It's like you need everywhere you look, it needs a picture. you just have to walk it in the streets and everything. It's just amazing how well preserved it is.
Well, in the story, the one story in the new book, it says that they had paintings everywhere, on all the outsides of the houses and the insides of the houses. Some of them were painted on the walls, and some of them were done with the little rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an art form. But she said everything was very white.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now it looks different after they cleaned the ash out. It's probably not as white as it was.
No, well, I mean, it probably wouldn't be.
The walls and everything.
Right. Well, they may have painted it to be white. Who knows? Yeah.
So anyway, every time we get a chance, I really want to look up history. Okay, so Julie went to Egypt while I was there because you're trying to set up the possibility tours. Of going over
right.
for tours.
Right. But before we get on that, I was just reminded about something else because you were talking about, your tour guide, how that was interesting that you got that tour guide. And then I was just remembered that when we were staying in Bristol, do you remember what was in the entryway in the hotel in Bristol?
Oh, was that...
that gorilla.
Yeah, you know, in the States, they have the cows. They have the cows that are painted different colors,
right.
and they're all over different
right.
cities. Or there's pigs, and
right.
they're all different colors.
Yeah.
Sometimes horses. In Bristol, it was gorillas.
Yeah, and I can't remember, was it 7 different ones around the city? It was something like that. They had all different places, and they had different artists were commissioned to paint them. And then they were all around the city, and they must have had something going on because people kept coming in. They're going, okay, here's this one. It's like they were checking off. They had to go out and see them all. Maybe they got a prize or something. I don't know.
It was big. But, it was right in the lobby when you come in.
And I just thought it was so interesting that the one that's in our hotel has all, it's all chakras. It's all about the whole chakra system. And it was just like, that is so amazing. You know, I mean, here.
The metaphysical gorilla.
Yeah, and we get the metaphysical gorilla at our hotel. I mean, because they showed pictures of the other ones. There were nothing. This was the only one that was metaphysical.
But to look at it, it was such bright colors, I don't think the average person would have even seen it.
No, it took me a while to even notice it. I was standing behind him, and it was just like, well, that's an odd place for, it was just, I saw circles, and it was like, well, that's odd. And then I started noticing, I was like, wait a minute, and I started counting them. I thought, oh, my goodness, because then I could see where they were located and everything. It was like, oh, and they're the right colors, they're everything. It was just amazing that, you know, that's not coincidental.
And everything about the gorilla was metaphysical, all the symbols that were painted on him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you looked in his eyes.
Oh, that was probably the best part was his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was like a silhouette of a person in his eyes. So it's like he's looking at you. He's like, you know, it's like you're in his eyes. So.
Right, where the pupil would be on the eye.
Right. I mean, the person that did that was just fantastic. That was so wonderful.
They were metaphysical. It's the only way they could have done
it. Right. And then they had an explanation of the chakra system and everything, and so not the base. But
I bet the average person wandering in that hotel
I saw them. I watched them. They were coming in, and they just took their pictures usually with the kids. It was like a thing to do with the kids. And nobody looked at it and said, oh, my goodness, look at this. They would read the plaque. Some of them did. But they didn't. We even asked the hotel staff if they knew what that meant. And they said no. So
and I asked some of them if you looked in his eyes.
Yeah.
No, they hadn't.
I mean, to me, that was the best part was his eyes. That was so cool. That was really special. It was just like, that made it, I don't know, it's just amazing. That made the whole thing.
That was at the beginning of our sacred tour that we were going. We all met there in the lobby, and we went off onto Glastonbury and to Stonehenge and Avebury.
Right.
So it was like cooking it all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was how we began.
Okay, well now Julie's going to talk about she went off to Egypt.
Right.
And
what we're doing this is because we're looking at doing a tour, maybe around a class, you know, next year. Just trying to figure out the dates now, the best way to do it. But that was the thing, is trying to figure out a tour and give people just a lot of, maybe do a sacred site and do some sacred things around sacred sites, you know, so it'd be really cool. I got to meet
separate from the cruise.
Separate from the cruise, yeah. So it'd be completely different. That's what's making it. That's a little bit of a challenge right now to try and figure out how to work it, where to work it, and when to work it. So because it is separate, and it's too much to have at the same time. So we just anyway. That's our challenge right now. But we'll get it done. But that's why I was there, so I could see what would be done, what would be shown, you know, and I was only getting a small part. I got like a week's worth of activities in 3 days. They told me I was running more than anybody would ever run on a tour. So I was Indiana Jones, that's for sure.
Tell them about the place you stayed.
Yeah, well, anyway, first of all, I met with Patricia and Yosef Alwyon, and and I'm going to show. I hate this. I apologize, Patricia and Yosef, but Yosef's father is a very famous, this is what he did. He was an archaeologist, and he knows these pyramids. He knows this land. He knows this area, and Yosef is kind of picking up and you know, this carrying. Is what he always, yeah, carrying it on, and he knows it. Yosef is a sculptor. They do stonework, and they have the stone shop, he and his brothers, and his family, actually. And then they're starting to do these, they're carrying on his father's work of kind of in educating people on all this ancient knowledge that's there and everything, and what's really real out there. You know, it's really kind of fun because we go out to these sites, and he's giving me his item. He's saying, well, the tour guides are going to tell you these are tombs. And sure enough, people have come by with their tour guards and their tour guides, and they're saying, yeah, this is a tomb, and this is this tomb, and this, and he's like, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was just funny.
We've always known better.
Right.
Tell them what you could see from your
my room, I was not staying in a hotel, in a five-star hotel. I was staying in a, it was just a flat that was for rent. It was Yosef's uncle had this flat, and it was the fifth story of a building that was just right down the street. It was right on a square, and it was like in this old part of Cairo. And it's smack dab next to the pyramids. I mean, so your view from the balcony is the pyramids and the Sphinx. I mean, they're just right there. Right, you can almost touch them. They're so close. So, it was not luxury accommodations, but my gosh, the view was priceless.
Who could have paid to be that close to them, really?
No. None of your hotels were going to get that kind of a view, no.
Uh-huh.
Only those people right there in those apartments and those places were getting that. And it's just amazing. It was just so surreal. It was just, that's really about all it was. I mean, that's all I kept thinking was it's just very surreal. But it's like a picture, you know, it just doesn't seem real because it's just there. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, you know, where when you look at it in a picture, it's like, oh, you know, we're going to go and everything, and then you're there, and it's just right there. It's still looking like a picture because it's so, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it any better than that. It's just, it's so amazing. It doesn't seem real. Okay? And so,
same with Rome, you know.
Right.
Everything
mm-hmm.
looks like what you've seen today.
Right.
Am I really here or not?
Yeah, exactly. And so,
and the city goes right up to it. It never shows that in the picture.
No, it's right up to it. In fact, we were in walking distance to the Great Pyramid. We just walked around this little corner, and there was a gate to go inside.
Hmm.
And you know, you get in there and everything. And then you can, they could give you a camel ride or something over to the pyramid. But it really was just, it's a walk. I mean, you're going to walk if you're around these pyramids. And then the Sphinx is right there in front of it. I mean, from my balcony, the Sphinx looked like a little puppy up next to the pyramid. And I thought that was so funny because in all your pictures, the Sphinx is huge, you know, but from that distance, it was showing it into perspective with the other. And it's tiny compared to the pyramid. And then we got down there next to it. Yeah, it's huge, but that just shows you how much bigger those pyramids are. They are enormous. I mean, they're just, you know, they're huge.
There's a lot of them, too, you see.
Oh, they said they found over 300 so far. Right there where we think there's just three. Six or seven right there. There's just a lot you don't even see. There's those three main ones, and then they have little ones, you know, and then all over the place are all these different pyramids. We went to several different places, and I probably saw about 12 while I was there, and all different kinds. Every single one of them, and they're trying to say that they're tombs, burial chambers, but they find no bones, they find nothing in anything to indicate that anybody's been buried there. In front of every single pyramid, every single one, is a temple and a causeway that runs up to the pyramid. This is where they keep excavating. They were excavating while we were there. It's continual excavation. And we were up on the top of, by the middle pyramid, and you look out And you can see where they're still excavating. And Joseph was asking me, what do you think is down there? It's like a city. It's very obvious. There's a whole city.
A little pyramid.
Well, this is a whole city. There's a city that was there. It's just a city. And part of it has been built over by Cairo. I mean, the city, see, you can see this landscape. You can tell by the landscape that there was a city. And then now you have this other city. See, it joins up to it, and you can tell it probably built on top of a lot of it. So when you get down into some of the temples, you can see where a temple has been built on top of something else. Because that's when their excavations, they can tell that there was something else under there. So
it's the same thing in Athens.
Mm-hmm.
They say if you go digging and you don't dig
right.
for a garden or anything
because
you're going to find something.
Yeah.
That something is built on top of something else.
Right. And it's just so much of that. And the interesting thing, you know, they're trying to tell you that they're burial chambers and everything, but all over, everywhere, there's these shafts, these huge shafts that go down very, very deep. And they're just big square shafts. And they look like maybe they were water tanks, but they held water. Sometimes they'll have holes in them that they run. You can see in other parts we went to, you could see what looks like a drainage system. It's like water lines made out of
stone.
Yeah. I mean, it's done. It's got bevels in it. It's round, and it goes around, and it moves, and they're water lines. This is where water was running.
We know there was a lot more water there than
right,
there is now.
Right. Now, whatever it was, if it was used for something, okay, my big adventure, and that's what she's wanting me to get to, is...
You said they had the bent pyramid, they had the...
Bent pyramid, bent pyramid, red pyramid, then you had the three that are the most popular, which is the Great Pyramid, the Middle Pyramid. I'm not sure what they call the little pyramid. There's a little one there. But then there's several little ones around the little one. So, but we were out there. Like the first day we went to the Middle Pyramid and to the temple and everything. And we went to this one area that they always go to. And you're able to sit into this one part. Every single one of them has this stone. And again, Joseph, I apologize. I'm horrible with remembering things, okay? So I apologize, but there's a stone that it's got this really weird shape. It's almost like it's pointed. It's carved, but we would sit on it and everything. It's almost but every single place they would do this, and they would say it was some kind of a
altar or
something. Yeah, but we would sit at it, and behind every time in a temple or anytime wherever this was, there was a false door behind it. Okay, and you'd see these false doors in different places, and this was sitting there like it was something. It was something special, okay. And so we were sitting in this one, and we were kind of just meditating. I think we were chanting or something. I don't know. They don't like people to come in and chant. They don't. That makes them nervous. And so if they see you doing too many metaphysical things, they're going to get you out of there.
Ah.
So there, it makes them nervous.
I wonder why they don't like chanting.
Well, they're just not sure what you're doing. So then they've been spreading rumors that you're worshiping the devil. And so they get people out of there. So people are kind of nervous about it. But anyway, but we were just kind of toning because it's beautiful acoustics in these areas and stuff. So we were just kind of, making some noise and it's really sounding really pretty. Anyway, and they were like, okay, other people are coming, get out. And usually you're allowed to sit there for a little while. And we were just kind of off in this little cubby hole. And so we were there ushering us out. Well, Joseph got really upset because we didn't get to spend any time in there. And so they don't want to make him angry because he brings people, you know. And so they were like, well, what are you upset about? And he said, well, we didn't get to spend our time in there. And they're like, and so then I said, well, wait a minute. Well, let's take you to this other place. So we ended up going to a place that all his life he's lived there, and he's been wanting to go into this area, and he hadn't been able to do it. And they took us to that place. So that was cool that we got to go someplace that he hadn't even ever been. So, and it was all these beautiful hieroglyphs on the wall and carvings and everything. And there was another one of those stones with the false door behind it. What I was feeling when I think it has something to do with a portal. That false door is—it's like a door, but it's like to show you where something is.
Well, we know there's a vortex on the ley lines where the pyramids are. Maybe it's something to do with that.
Maybe. I don't know. I just kept feeling like I think it's something. It's just to show you where they are, and then you know, that's just because there'd be like a space, and I don't know. It's just something. It's indicative of something. There's something there. One of the, on the second day, we went, okay, everybody, my big thing, and that I told them right up front, you know, I had claustrophobia. This was a, you know, this is one of my things to deal with. We found out early on, and when you were starting to do your stuff, you were practicing on me, and I think it was the first session we did, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. One of the first.
One of the first. We found out, you know, why I was so claustrophobic. But I have, ever since I was little, I'm deathly afraid of fire, claustrophobic, and there's a bunch of things. Anyway.
But she hates to get in these little bitty elevators they have in some, all over Europe. They have these little elevators.
Yeah, I mean, I have to really think about it. I have
only
to.
Have like two people can fit in those little elevators.
Yeah, it's very small. I have to really think about it. I have to psych myself up to do it. And
so
when I was younger, like in college, which is when we did the session, I couldn't have done that. I wouldn't go into elevators. And then I was on the ninth floor in a dormitory, but we didn't do it. We did this before that, so it was interesting. I could see how I had already improved just by having that session. We found out where it came from, and then I was able to at least get into elevators, things like that.
Go up to your room.
Right. So it's like I have to have certain conditions, and then I can do it. Or I can talk to myself and do it. But
that's one of her greatest things.
Right. But going down shafts or into, you know, tunnels, caves, things like that, it's like, or if I have to bend down, that's a little, it's going to make me think about it. And in New Grange, when we went in there, that was a tight thing, and you had to bend down, and you had to squeeze through something. I had to talk myself through that, and luckily they let me be the last person so that I could do it at my pace. That's the thing, is if you have somebody behind you, you feel trapped, and so it's like it's okay if you're like the last one, and you can kind of, or if you have space between you and somebody else. So, but that was already an accomplishment there. But anyway, so we go to, on the second day, we go to the Red Pyramid, and this... It's not on the main tourist beach. It is on there, but it's not like the Great Pyramid where hordes of people go. And this is something else I need to mention here. When we were there, it was very quiet. There were some people there, and by the time I left, there were more and more people there. They said people had just started coming back 2 weeks before I got there from all that
tourists,
that was going on. Tourists, yes. The tourists were just starting to come back. They were really having a hard time. I think it's at 80% of their tourists come from America. And
but they had the revolution.
Right. They had that. Everybody stopped coming, and they were just barely. This area lives solely on tourists. And they're so hungry. They're just eating bread. They're just barely getting by, waiting for the tourists to come back. So they were just starting to come back when I got there. And the 5 days that I was there, by the time I left, you could see how much it increased just in that week, how many more people were there than they were the first day. So it was
kind of had the place to yourself, really, that way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this Red Pyramid wasn't on, like I said, the Great Pyramid, they're going to go to the main places, and it's not on one of the main slots. So that was nice because that was the way I could go through this initiation, and that's how I see it, was an initiation. So, but we walk up. The outside, you walk about halfway up the outside of this pyramid, and then it has a shaft that goes down. And so just walking up was a lot because it's steep steps and everything, and you're up there, then you're winded and things, okay, and then you get to go down the shaft. And it's just a square, it's about 4 feet by 4 feet. I think that's about what, maybe three, yeah. Maybe 3 feet. 3 feet by 3 feet. That's what it was. The Great Pyramid was like 4 feet by 4 feet. And anyway, so it goes down, and it goes down at a sharp slant. And they have a little, like a ladder in there. It's a board with steps on it, so you can just, you know, you have something you can catch your feet on. And so I'm just going to give a word of advice out there. Your tendency is to want to walk down sideways or front ways. You can't do it front ways because you have to bend over. I want to go down sideways because that's that thing in me that wants to know what's going on. The best way to walk down these things is backwards. It's just the best way. Because I went halfway, I went part of the way down sideways. And then I started freaking out because you just can't, because you have to bend over so much. Well, see, that's another one of those things, you know, you have to bend over. Mm-hmm. And if you're going down backwards, see, that's a natural position of the body. If you're climbing, if you're in that climbing position. But anyway, so he was like, turn around, go backwards. So I got about halfway down, and I could still see the opening up at the top and stuff, and I kept looking behind me, and I thought we were almost there. And then Yosef said, oh, we're halfway there. And I looked up, and I thought, halfway? Oh, my gosh, I can't do this. There's no way I could if we were almost there. But I thought, there's no way I can go deeper into this thing. The claustrophobia set in and panic. I panicked. And I was starting my way back up. I was taking a few steps, and there happened to be someone at the top who was up there when we got there, and I thought they had just come out, he and his girlfriend. And anyway, he popped his head over. He could hear the conversation going on, and he starts telling me, he just started talking to me and just saying, you know, just visualize a purple light or maybe the blue light and visualize a falcon. I'm not sure what that was all going to do, but anyway, it was something in his voice.
Get your mind off of
it. Something, I don't know. I was trying to visualize those things. I don't know if I did it or not, but it was something in his voice, I think, is what really did it. And all of a sudden, it's like something just, it just happened. Something shifted. And I pulled everything came together, and then I just started going down, and it's just like I just held it together, and because Yosef kept thinking, well, something about safety. I said, well, no, it's not safety because this thing's been here forever. I know it's not going to cave in. It's not that feeling.
I hope not.
I think it's just a closed-in feeling. I really don't know what makes claustrophobia, you know, what is the thing that you're afraid of there. But anyway, so we go down. I finally make it to there. I get all the way down, and we get into this big chamber. And my first thought was, well, who on earth, that'd be little people to come down that. And he said, people didn't come through that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. It was a shaft. I mean, this is a shaft. This is a man-made little ladder that was in there. It was not built for walking through. It was never made for people to walk through that. It felt to me like it's an air shaft, you know, because it goes up, okay? I mean, we were walking down it. We go up, so it's like, and it goes up halfway up the thing. It felt like, you know, and then they're in this chamber, and the walls very symmetrically move in, you know, each layer. They're huge, huge stones, square stones, and each layer comes in about 4 inches, perfectly symmetrical on each side until they come to a perfect peak at the top. So you have this triangle room, and it's beautiful, beautiful acoustics and everything. So he was playing his flute in there. He has beautiful flute and music, and he was playing it. And then we went off into this. There's another little walkway. You go off and you climb steps, and you get to the king's chamber. It's like there's a queen's chamber and a king's chamber in all of these. Okay, that's where they are.
Every one of these.
Every one of them. There's one chamber and then another chamber up above. And so we went up to the other one, and in the big up in the upper. Okay, that was in the great one. I don't remember what was in this one. Anyway, but you get up in there, and we got up in there, then another tour group came in. So I was like, okay, I'm going to leave. I don't want to be around this group when they're trying to leave or whatever, you know, and stuff. So we kind of held around, and then we left ahead of them. And then ended up, there was right behind us, this guy came up, and he was from Texas. So you go around the world to find somebody, your neighbor, you know. So anyway, so that was my huge, I felt like I was initiated that day because I did that. I mean, that was a huge accomplishment for me to do that, to get down there. Anyway, but what I was trying to say was you feel like, I mean, they're always trying to figure out what are these. But I felt like I was in the middle of a machine when I was in there. It's like this is something constructed for something.
For
you
a
know?
Purpose.
It's a purpose. Yeah, you're inside a machine. You're inside something. So has no feelings of burial. There's no writing on the walls. There's none. There's nothing because it's not meant for people. If people aren't inside there, you know, so there's no hieroglyphs. There's nothing like that. All of that's in the temple, the temples that are below, that are in front of them. So anyway, so we did that. We were seeing a lot of different. We went to. I couldn't even tell you all the different places. Again, I apologize because there's so many and they have names that I don't understand. So I didn't know all the places I was. But there was
you
a museum.
Said you walked all the way around the outside of the
I walked
Great Pyramid.
miles. Yeah, when we were at the Great Pyramid, the first day we walked all around the Middle Pyramid. When we went to the Middle Pyramid, we walked all the way around the Great Pyramid, and then we came on the other side of the Sphinx. The third day, we went back to the Great Pyramid, and then that's
and then
when,
the Sphinx looks big when you get up
when you're up there next to it, yes, it's big. So the third day, we went to the Great Pyramid again, and we went inside the Great Pyramid. So now that's what they're saying. If I could do the Red Pyramid, then the Great Pyramid's a walk in the park because the shafts are bigger. And they're now going up. And it's easier to go up than because you have to go backwards to go back, you know, go down. So anyway, now I had this figured out. And so we went and we worked it where we weren't around a lot of people. We had to time it where we were between tourist groups. And we spent a lot of time up in the King's Chamber, which is where the sarcophagus is. And I actually got to lay down in it, got my picture made inside the sarcophagus and stuff. But it's just this huge room. It's just a huge room with these huge, humongous stones, square stones again. And
it's definitely not a tomb.
It's not a tomb. It's not. But you'll still hear all these tour guides telling everybody it's the tomb of whoever. So
before we go off this, I want you to talk about the boat.
Yes, I'm going to. So anyway, so that's in there. Now, right next to the Great Pyramid is, they've got it's a little museum where they have this boat. And they're showing that this was found, it's like right next to it there was this big hole made out of stone that had this boat in it. And it had all these, it's like 40 of these huge stones again over the top of it. And
it was like it was in a little...
ravine or something. I mean, it was made out of stones. It was down in that.
But
then
the other stones were on top.
They were on top, like they were holding it down, or they weren't hiding it. I mean, it was kind of, you could say they were hiding it, but they were over it. They would have crushed it. To me, it was like they're trying to hold it. That's the feeling I got, was trying to hold it down.
What they call it.
Yeah, they call it the solar boat. And it was just, they said it was actually larger than Columbus's boat that came over here to discover America. It was a very small boat. But the oars were really strange. They were not out of the middle, like they were really going to propel the boat. They went up to the top of the boat, and in a cross section, I'm not sure how anybody would propel them. And then when you got down to the blades are pointed. And it didn't look like they would actually touch much water.
Not like a paddle.
No. And so... they found these. They found several of them, actually. And so they're trying to understand. They recreated this. One man recreated this one, and that's what was on display. And but they were showing these stones that were on top of it and how they found it, what it looked like when they found it. And I just got very clearly that the stones were being used to hold it down. So I think the boat levitated. That's what I felt like. Mm. I don't know what those oars were used for, but I don't know. If anybody has any other ideas on that, but that was just this feeling I had.
They looked like sticks rather than paddles.
Right, yeah.
And
it doesn't look like it could hold very many people. I don't know if these are the ships that they came over from Atlantis on. That was, you know, who knows?
Yeah, because we do know in my work that they did leave Atlantis, some of them did, and sailed.
Yeah.
But they also had airships, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they went to
airship.
They went to Egypt. But, yeah, how are you going to propel something with this whole series of pointed sticks?
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't really try to explain that part, you know. It just didn't make a lot of sense. So, but it's just really, that was interesting because I was just taking so many pictures of that because I thought, no, I don't think we know this. That's not a story that's out very much. We see the pyramids. We don't hear anything about a boat.
Solar boat.
A solar boat that's buried next to the pyramid.
And why would they call it a solar boat?
Right. Exactly.
Hmm.
I don't know. That Very interesting. So, but that's, it was really, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of walking. I was, there were days, I was, that day I was very, very tired. It was certain days I was very tired. It was a lot of walking, a lot of adventuring.
It was hot.
It was hot. But it was a whole, it was really good. It was really rewarding to go there. And, I don't know, it's like a connection. I'm not sure what it is. I'm sure it's filling in some missing pieces to me. You know, I don't know all of it yet. So.
But you said even looking at the pictures, it's like you weren't really there, like it was just not real.
Like I said, it's so amazing. It's surreal. It's just very surreal. It's like it's hard to, you know you're there, you see it, and but it still looks like a picture. It just, it's so big and so amazing, it's hard to believe it's really real. Mm. So. And it's just right there, you know, within walking distance. That's the amazing thing. So it's just, it's just right there out your front window, the front door. So,
so if you do arrange a tour, mm-hmm. that the Museum of the Solar Boats would be in
it. It would be in it. There was a lot of museums. We saw another museum that had, it was all these different statues and everything. I wanted to say the Valley of the Dead, but or the Valley of the Kings, but I don't...
That's a different place.
Yeah, I don't think that was it. I'm not sure where this was, but they had this huge statue. I think that was part of one of the statues that were, like, down in the further south,
yeah.
where they had the huge statues with the temples and everything. So, well, anyway, so that was my adventure. But
okay.
The biggest part was overcoming my phobia.
Claustrophobia, yeah. That was a big thing.
Well, and then that was what it was like. That I think very much, Yosef gave me a papyrus drawing, and one of them was an initiation.
Uh-huh.
And so that's the one I picked out, because that was that day. That's what I felt like I had done. I'd been initiated that day. So
yeah. And you did overcome the claustrophobia.
Yeah,
you don't think
yeah.
that's going to bother you anymore.
I know I can do it. I don't know that I'd go out of my way to go find things to do like that, but I know I can do it, and that's the big thing. So.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. That probably won't bother you anymore like that at all.
We're probably at time, aren't we?
I think so. Mm-hmm. We're at time we have to quit, and we haven't even finished the trip yet.
We're pretty close, though.
Pretty close. We have gone through it. I'm not sure if Julia's going to take over while I'm gone or not, but I leave in a couple of days. I'm headed back out again. We've only been home a little over a week, but I've got to go to Singapore and do a class there, and then down into Australia. It'll be about
another
six or seven cities in Australia, and I'll be doing a class in Perth and a class in Melbourne. I'll be back here Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if Julia wants to do this while
we're
gone or not.
We'll see how brave I am. So.
Because she has a lot of things that she can talk about, too. But anyway, if not, they'll be pulling shows out of the archives till I get back. And I appreciate the patience of you guys, because you said you do like the live shows, but it has to be around my trips and when I'm home. It's too hard to do it with the different time zones.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I'll be back here Thanksgiving. Okay, so anyway, it's another run of our adventures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and I am working on Convoluted 4. It'll be out by next month, you said.
Right, the end of November, 1st of December.
Mm-hmm. It'll be out. So if anybody's interested in that book, you can contact our office. Okay, but we're going to have to go now, or Don's going to pull the plug. So thanks, everyone, for listening and for tuning in tonight to hear about all these weird, strange things that we do. So good night, everyone.
Good night. Make it great.